Hello and welcome to the 13th episode of the Reddix Copycast. I'm Fiona Campbell-Howes, Reddix's Managing Director and Lead Copywriter. And for this episode, I'm delighted to welcome back our Associate Writer and General Copywriting Supremo, David Maguire of Lungfish.
Hello. What a title. What an introduction. Thank you.
Well, thank you. Thank you for coming back in. It's great to have you back.
Well, it's lovely to be here. And I'm very much enjoying your new podcasting den.
Podcasting yet, as it might be. Yes, of which there'll be photos on Twitter, I'm sure.
It's awesome. Later. I feel like I'm 7 years old all over again.
Let's hope it doesn't fall down during the recording.
Oh, that would be quite entertaining.
For this episode, we're going to be looking at what I have named as the big B2B content marketing trend of 2014.
Just putting it out there. Well, lay on.
This is the name that I've given. Other people have given it different names, but I've kind of dubbed it hyperspecificity.
It's easy for you to say.
Yeah. It's the most unpronounceable next big thing name ever. But this is really, in B2B marketing, this is all about, well, other people are calling it personalization or context or audience relevance. So this is all about making the content that we're creating really relevant to the person within the target organization that we're writing the content for. So I think what's happened here is that everybody's kind of jumped on the content marketing bandwagon. Mm-hmm. Everyone started creating loads and loads of content, and therefore there's this mass of content out there. And a lot of it's really generic. So it just talks about really generic business issues that might apply to just about everybody.
Yeah.
And therefore isn't particularly relevant on that particular day to that particular person when it comes across their desk.
No, it's just, there's this big island of content circling in the middle of the Pacific Ocean that no one ever goes to. It's 2 miles across.
Yes, and soon we're going to have to jettison it into space because it become too big.
We can round up all the bad content and fire it into the heart of the sun.
Exactly. So this whole trend is, you know, looking at how can we make this content less generic and how can we make it much more relevant to the people that we're targeting. So just really wanted to have a chat with you as to whether this is something you see happening as well in the clients that you work with, and kind of how you're approaching, as a copywriter, how you're approaching the challenge of making content much more specific to the person you're targeting.
Yeah, I think it's a challenge, but, you know, as with all good challenges, it's an opportunity as well to improve your writing, I think. It's always been a thing with B2B marketing in particular that for a lot of clients, a lot of companies, you have a very good idea who your customer is. I mean, you know who you want to target. You might have a top 50, a top 200 accounts that you want to win. And much more than a consumer brand, often B2B brands can drill right down to quite literally, this is the company, these are the influencers. We know who they are, we know where they sit, we know what their desks are, we know what their commute is, you know, all of this, no, actually, that's getting quite creepy.
This is something we'll come on to talk about, is how do we do it without making it creepy, but yeah.
Yes, but yes, we know where you live. But you have a really good idea of who you're producing that content for. And yeah, in a sense, that's a challenge with delivery, but I think also it can help, you know, to know who you're writing for, to write something that is really relevant and really engages. I mean, the better the intelligence that you've got, the better the creative work sometimes.
Hmm. And how do you go about getting that intelligence? Because I know a lot of people are moving towards creating buyer personas and kind of putting themselves in the shoes of their ideal buyer, and who is that person and what do they eat for breakfast and what is their commute. And then I saw a blog post recently on the Content Marketing Institute by Ardeth Albi saying those personas tend to be just put in a drawer and forgotten about because it's not actually relevant what these people have for breakfast. And content creators don't actually find those kind of personas very useful because that's not really relevant information when you're trying to write a white paper about how they can make their supply chain better. You know, whether they had Weetabix or porridge isn't really here or there.
It depends on the kind of content that you're creating. I think sometimes it is quite helpful to have a fairly rounded human being in mind, even if they're a fake human being that doesn't really exist. I mean, I'm reminded of, you know, having a person in mind, I think, is useful rather than it being for people, it being for, you know, oh, it's for CMOs, it's for CIOs. No, it's for a CMO. Yeah. You know, people don't read your content in big groups, usually. They read individually. And it reminds me a lot of a trick that some of the old radio broadcasters used to do, the really good ones, where they would quite literally take a photo into the studio with them. Might be something they knew, might be something they didn't know. And they'd pin it up on the wall opposite them, and when they were talking, they would talk to that person. Mm. So, you know, and you can still tell the really good radio broadcasters are people that address you, the listener, as an individual. You know, the ones that just, you know, being egotistical are the ones that, you know, would address you as folks, yes, and stuff like that. Yeah, I'm sorry, yeah. I'm not folks. I'm not all you people out there in radio land. I'm just me. Yeah. And I'm listening on my own, so talk to me. And I think it's the same thing. However much or how little insight my clients got into their target audience, you know, ideal person that they want to read, it is kind of useful for me to take that, whether there's, you know, there's analytics and CRM data, or whether it's just, you know, we spoke to the sales guys and they say, well, the normal buyer that I talk to, you know, these are the people that are involved in the chain of, you know, yeah, you just ask the question. But having an idea in my head of I'm writing for that person, you know, and getting someone in my mind, yeah, to an extent of, okay, what car do they drive, and that kind of thing. Yeah, that's not relevant to the, you know, to the information, the level of information that's across, but it is kind of relevant to the tone,
yes,
and yeah, to the, you know, the context, and you know, what else is fighting for their attention. Mm. You know, you're not just fighting the other brands. There's all sorts of things that are competing for their attention that you're fighting with your content.
Yeah, that's a very good point. So if you understand their interests outside of work, you can understand what are the other types of things that might be fighting for their attention. Hmm. And if you understand the kinds of, I don't know, cultural or media things that they like, then you can kind of tailor the tone of the content piece that you're writing to kind of echo that kind of approach or tonality, I guess. But as a copywriter, do you find that your clients are providing these personas for you, or are you having to do your own research around them? Because I know for us it's a mixture of both. So some agencies are very good at creating very good personas with a picture of that person, so you can put it on the desk in front of you and imagine that you're writing for that person.
Yeah.
And some, you know, we end up having to do quite a lot of that research ourselves, and so we always have really tight deadlines, so we're like scrabbling around on LinkedIn looking for, you know, the job description for that particular role, and, you know, what does it involve, and
yeah,
and what should that person be thinking about. But I mean, do you find the same, or do you find you get them supplied?
No, it varies wildly.
Yeah.
You know, I think more often than not I find myself just kind of asking, you know, who is this person, who's going to read it?
Yeah.
You know, and worryingly often the answer is, oh, I hadn't really thought of that.
Yes, yeah. Or it's, oh, everybody, you know, oh, we want to target the CEO and the CIO and the head of supply chain operations with this, and, you know, in this whole one piece, which, you know, is exactly what we're getting away from with this kind of hyper-specificity.
And is that kind of drill it down to, you know, well, who do you want most?
Yes.
You know, who is the person, you know, because you can guess what someone's office environment is like, whether they commute this out. Now, obviously, that's not going to apply to everybody. Mm. But if you can hit the nail on the head for a few people, you might get close for quite a lot of others. And for all the other people, it's going to be no worse than if you hadn't bothered to try to make it personal.
Yeah, because we were looking at some blog posts that people had written recently around this topic. And an interesting thing that Bob Apollo came up with in a recent blog post about making your content much more personalised is that when you're writing that content, you really want to be imagining the kind of conversation that it needs to spark when the salesperson calls. What kind of conversation are they going to have with that person? Should you therefore in the content be anticipating their questions that they're going to have and starting to answer those so that there's already a basis for conversation when the salesperson calls, which I thought was really interesting.
Yeah.
Because I know that in the past, I don't think that I've ever imagined the follow-up sales conversation to the piece of content that I'm writing. I mean, obviously we're focusing on getting the right messages out to that person, but in terms of sitting down and thinking, someone's going to ring this person, they're going to talk about this piece of content, how is that conversation going to go? That's a new and interesting thing for me.
Yeah, it's all, you know, it's a lovely jargon, it's all, you know, buyer journeys and, and that kind of thing. But it's always a good question to ask a client, where does this fit into the process? When someone's receiving this, how much do they know already?
Yeah.
And what comes next? And for any piece of content, where it fits into the overall picture is something that, you know, takes a bit of time. And as writers, we don't always have the luxury of thinking about. But, you know, if you can do it, I think it makes a world of difference.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is another dimension that we're looking at, I guess, with this specific content. It's not just who's the specific person and what are their specific issues, but where specifically are they within the whole decision-making process? You know, are they just starting to look at a new solution? Do they not even know they've got a problem? Or are they ready to evaluate different things? Or are they almost ready to buy? And then you need to tailor the content to that as well. So there's an awful lot of fragmentation needed, a lot of thinking needed in order to make it really specific to the opportunity that you have.
And sometimes people don't think about that. You know, you can talk to a client and go, okay, what's, you know, what happens next? They go, oh yes, I suppose we ought to have a call to action, really. And it's like, where does it fit? Where does it, you know, what do you want them to do once they've read this? What are they going to want to do? What are they going to need next? Where does it go? What piece of the jigsaw is it? And sometimes people just go, you know, because they get it the wrong way around, because they've got marketing automation software, or they've got systems, or they see content marketing as a new thing, as a process, and we have to have content and it has to be mapped to this, and oh, there's a gap there, we have to fill that gap. They're looking at it the wrong way up. You know, it's about communicating with people, not satisfying a process. The process supports the message.
Yes.
You know, it's not, you're not coming up with messages in order to feed a process.
And I think that's true. And I think people have been struggling to get to grips with marketing automation. We see people getting a lot more familiar with it now and being able to use it in this way to kind of take the buyer through a journey and to understand, once they've downloaded this, this is where they go next. But it's taking quite a while, I think, for people to really get to grips with how that needs to be done. I mean, we've looked at this in a previous podcast, but one of the challenges this creates for us as copywriters is that suddenly marketers want to create the entire lot of content at once to feed into the marketing automation system. So our deadlines are squeezed like this. So we have to create the whole lot right up front, probably within the same deadlines as we would have had before for like a single one-off marketing campaign.
Yes.
And then when you're bringing this whole personalization angle into it as well, when we're having to create little snippets of personalized content, so, you know, there's an email, but we need to have a little snippet in there for this particular job role, and we're targeting 10 different job roles, so we need to research each one, create individual emails for each one. It's having to do a lot of research as writers to create a lot of content in really short timescales, so the client can then take it and put it into the marketing automation system, and it then sort of rolls out over the next few months. So I see that as a definite challenge for copywriters in this whole move to personalisation.
So a definite skill in just making it human.
Yeah. And so I guess, as we were saying earlier, one of the things to think about there is when you are going down into this level of personalisation, marketing to a specific person, and you were talking about doing account-based marketing as well, when we are genuinely marketing to specific people who we know, the influencers within the organisation, how do we make that personal without it tipping over into being creepy? I don't know if you have the magic answer to that.
Well, the silver bullet is. Now, for me, I think the antidote's honesty. You know, you don't... I think the thing where, you know, I don't know if it's the uncanny valley thing, but I think for me, where things get creepy is when you're pretending that you don't know as much about a person as you do. What? Really? We've, you know, targeted this at you exactly, completely by luck. Wow. You know, oh, you know, when people keep bumping in your manufacturing meetings, to be, you know, that kind of stuff is creepy.
Yeah.
To kind of say, you know, this is a thing that we've written for people who are in this stage of the buying, you know, often people who are at the stage of the buying process that we think you might be at have problems with this, 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 and this. Therefore, we've produced this because we think it's likely to be helpful to you at the moment.
Yeah.
That's not a creepy message. That's a we're thinking about you and we're being helpful message.
Yeah. And I think honesty is definitely the way to go. I know that we're working on a project at the moment where we are targeting specific organisations, so we've had to do quite a lot of research into those organisations and individual executives within those organisations and what they're saying, which could have become quite creepy in the stuff that we're writing. But I think if we're honest and say, well, you say in your annual report this, or you mentioned in this press interview this, I think if you're quite honest about where the information's come from, they at least don't think that you're stalking.
Yes.
Or you've had their meetings bugged, or that there's a mole within the organisation who's leaking content to these marketing agencies.
Yeah. Or that you have links to the spirit realm.
Or even that you have links to the spirit realm, yes. Yeah. I think possibly that might be a good place to stop. That's pretty much all that we've got time for today. Thanks again, David, for coming in. Always a pleasure.
Thank you for having me.
You can follow Radix on Twitter at radix.com, and you can visit our website at radix-communications.com, where you can also sign up for our monthly e-newsletter for the latest copywriting tips and insights.
It's really good.